This is DW News, and these are our top stories. The late Ruth Bader Ginsburg has become the first woman and the first Jewish person to lie in state at the U.S. Capitol. Presidential candidate Joe Biden was among those attending a ceremony to honor her life. Ginsburg served on the Supreme Court bench for 27 years and was a champion for gender equality and various liberal causes. At least 22 people are dead after a military plane crashed in eastern Ukraine. The Antonov An-26 aircraft crashed and burst into flames while landing in the city of Chuhuiv. Authorities say two people on board were seriously injured and four others were missing. Most of the victims were young military cadets. French authorities say a knife attack in Paris was, quote, clearly an Islamist act of terror. The incident left two people wounded, one seriously. Police have arrested two suspects. The attack took place near the former headquarters of satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, where Islamist extremists gunned down 12 people in 2015. This is DW News from Berlin. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at DW News or visit our website, dw.com.
Before the pandemic, we got used to the sight of thousands of schoolchildren around the world skipping school on Fridays to demand urgent action on climate change. And COVID happened. Well, today, Greta Thunberg and her followers around the world are back and they're socially distant. But the message is still the same. But how much difference has Fridays for Future actually made? I'm Phil Gale in Berlin and this is The Day.
We have to act now, or we're going to lose everything.
And we're here to support School Strike for Climate actions, because we really feel that their future is on the line here.
So we will be the future generation who will be facing the crisis. So obviously, that's why we are here to raise our voice against it. So we don't want it.
Climate crisis as a crisis is just as simple as that. The climate crisis has never once been treated as a crisis.
Also on the day, the race to create the first coronavirus vaccine. But is the search for a cure the only motivation?
It's part of Russia's strategic interests to always want to be first, irrespective of whether it's a revolution or the first flight into space. Now it's about saying that we're the first to develop a vaccine.
Welcome to The Day. Well, the Fridays for Future climate protests are back for the first time since the pandemic hit back in March. The rallies calling for urgent government action on climate policy went online when the pandemic began. Today, more than 3,000 climate strike events took place all over the world.
Bad weather and social distancing rules couldn't keep them away. The Fridays for Future protests are back. Thousands of people in Berlin and all over Germany urged the government to do more to combat climate change. Young and old came, and along with their signs, they brought the mandatory masks.
People told me they were happy to finally be able to go back to the streets to protest, thinking that during the coronavirus pandemic, the issue of climate change had been forgotten. Their main goal for the protest is to push the German government and the European governments to respect the 1.5-degree limit to the rising global temperatures that was set by the Paris Climate Agreement.
More than 3,000 rallies were registered worldwide, mostly small gatherings due to the pandemic. In Stockholm, Greta Thunberg, who started the School Strike for Climate over 2 years ago, was among the protesters. Before the pandemic, millions used to march every Friday, like here in the Belgian capital. Now protesters had to be more creative.
Here in Brussels, climate protesters want to shed a light on those regions of the world that are already affected by climate change. Here behind me, you can see video messages from climate protesters from all around the world. They want to show that climate change is a global problem and that the climate movement is a global movement.
A movement that made people protest on this Friday here in Nairobi, Kenya.
Want it now.
And more than 10,000 kilometers away brought activists to the streets of Mexico City.
The federal government has undertaken a number of large-scale projects that will damage natural areas. That's the urgent threat that these young people want to draw attention to.
Like a new train connection that will lead right through the jungle. Protesters fear for their beaches, coral reefs, and the overall biodiversity in Mexico. The coronavirus put a pause on the protest, but it did have some positive impact too.
The COVID-19 pandemic has seen factories periodically suspend operations, resulting in a reduction in CO2 emissions and cleaner air. But activists argue the world will eventually need to shift to permanently changing its behaviors in order to bring global temperatures down.
A permanent change. That is what activists all over the world are demanding.
Let's take a closer look at this with Miranda Schurz. She's Professor of Environment and Climate Policy at Munich's Technical University. Welcome to DW. It's often said, and we heard it in the report, that governments are not treating the climate crisis as a crisis. Is that true?
Well, I think it's true in that we've seen the governments around the world being rather slow in the development of climate policies. But something that we're also seeing recently is that the Fridays for Future movement and other youth are starting to have some impact. There's more and more governments around the world starting to take action, developing climate laws, announcing climate emergencies. Also, at the European level, the announcements of a Green Deal, which has a climate neutrality goal for mid-century, these are important changes. And although the Fridays for Future movement may not be the only reason these things are happening, they've certainly played a role.
In as much as what they've brought it to, they've highlighted it as an issue for governments.
You know, the for Future managed to do is to wake up the media and get the media to really pay attention to an issue that's been around for a long time. And I think they've been able to do it because we're not used to seeing hundreds and thousands of 14 and 15-year-olds out on the streets, politically active, basically willing to speak directly to politicians, to the highest level of politics, and basically say, "You are ignoring us, you're forgetting us, it's our future, we need action, we need action. Your lack of action will affect our futures." And it has appeal. It's, of course, we care about the young people, and I think by getting out on the streets and by demanding change, Bloomberg, Louisenoy, Bauer, they've had impact. They've been able to motivate other young people, and the demands for change, they are being listened to.
Okay, so we have the Fridays for Futures movement doing those things that you just outlined there, but we also have the more militant environmental campaigners, like Extinction Rebellion. Do their antics change the minds of governments or voters as well, or just annoy people?
I think that what we've seen with the Extinction Act, it also the media attention. Personally, I'm not so sure that having violence is really the right approach. In fact, I don't think it's the right approach. But I'm calling attention to just how serious this climate crisis is. What we've been hearing for far too long is, yes, we're taking action, but that action has been very slow. It's been incremental. And that is something that really is not sufficient. It's not sufficient for the pace at which climate change is happening. We really need to have a phase out of fossil fuels. We need to have a switch to renewable energy. We need to build our cities differently.
And that all needs to happen a lot quicker. Forgive me for interrupting. I just want to sort of get COVID into this, because we've seen vast amounts of money that industrialized countries have poured into saving their economies from COVID. Are they likely to backslide on their climate commitments as a result of this, or perhaps use this as an opportunity to embrace a greener future? Which way are they likely to go?
I like to think positive. So I'll say they're likely to at least put some of the investment money that needs to be happening to get economies going again in the direction of what the Fridays for Future group is calling for, the energy transition, the transport transition. We just saw China announce that they're looking towards a 2060 target for climate neutrality. California, with the big fires, just announced that they are speeding up their call for transition of the automobile sector. No more gasoline-fired automobiles after 2035. So I think things are going to change. But of course, we do have to.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Technical difficulties have floored us in the end. But Professor Miranda Schreuers from Munich's Technical University, thank you so much for joining us, and apologies for some of the technical sound quality there. Now, the European Commission will challenge a ruling that the tech company Apple does not have to pay a bill of €13 billion in back taxes to Ireland. Last July, an EU court decided Apple had not broken any rules on tax and that it was not the recipient of illegal state aid from the Irish government. The Commission alleges Ireland had allowed Apple to attribute nearly all of its EU earnings to an Irish head office that existed only on paper, thereby avoiding paying tax on EU revenues. Apple and the Irish government deny the claims. Sounds a bit tangled and weird, doesn't it? Kate Ferguson from DW Business can explain more. Welcome, Kate. Why is the Commission going to appeal?
Well, basically, Phil, the European Commission is fed up with multinationals paying so little tax, and it sees this very much as a homegrown problem. Under the current arrangements in Europe, every country decides for themselves what their corporation tax rate is. Ireland's is famously low at 12.5%. And just to put that into context, here in Germany, it's 30%, and even in the US, it's 22%. This particular case, though, isn't actually about that 12.5% corporate tax rate. It's about something else. It's about how Ireland and Apple came to a very specific arrangement. And there's two sides to this, and I'm going to try and explain it as simply as I can. The first has to do with intellectual property licensing, and the other has to do with phantom capital. So back in 2014, Apple and Ireland came together, and it was agreed that Apple would move most of its intellectual property ownership to Ireland. What that means is that if you buy an iPhone in China, that company, the subsidiary in China, has to pay the Irish company intellectual property service fees. That can be a substantial amount of money. Apple doesn't disclose how much. Right. And you think, OK, this means that they'll have to pay 12.5% tax on this. Favourable. Maybe the European Commission's not mad about it, but still within the realms of respectability. But that's not, in fact, what's happening. So what Apple has done is come to a very particular arrangement with the Irish government, whereby it says that those profits made are actually managed elsewhere in a company that doesn't actually have a fixed abode. And because of that, the Irish government allows Apple to divert its profits and the tax payable on it to a company that doesn't actually exist anywhere in particular. And that's what led the European Commission to conclude that Apple has, in effect, only been paying about 1% tax in Ireland.
So, in effect, you're talking about millions, perhaps even billions, going from Apple somewhere out there into Ireland and out again to somewhere out there.
Exactly, €13 billion to be exact.
And it seems extraordinary that the Irish government doesn't want that €13 billion. Why?
Well, to put it simply, because it thinks its relationship with Apple and its reputation as a destination for tech investment is worth more than 13 right. billion euros. And you can see why when you look at it from Ireland's perspective. It's a small country. It doesn't have much industry of its own to boast of. These tech companies are hugely valuable to the company, to the country. They provide thousands of jobs. So there's not too much in it for Ireland to go tough at this point.
Now, the person leading the charge from the